We're in the 16th chapter, and as I mentioned earlier, there's 63 verses in this chapter. That's just one big long parable. And remember, a parable is a story that has no names, just roles that are played by different individuals. And it's by design, because the parable is designed to teach us by the interaction between these different parties without placing names on them. It's to pull personalities out, names out, and just talk about the dynamics between the different entities. Now, this parable is specifically directed to the nation Israel. But I want to just take you back to the 14th chapter, and in the 13th verse there, God says, "Son of man, when a land sins against me by trespassing grievously, then I will stretch out my hand upon it, and I will break the staff of bread of it, and I will send famine upon it, and will cut off man and beast from it." Now, our Bibles say the land, but the Hebrew says a land. This is generic. So even though this is focusing in on the nation Israel, this whole book of Ezekiel, it is for us too. Because God's will, God's morality, God's judgments, and the responsibility that he's given to human beings doesn't change whether it's the nation Israel or the nation America. Everybody has responsibility to God. Now, this parable in the 16th chapter, as we've seen, has got a multiplicity of stages. And he starts out this parable by saying, "Well, Israel, I lifted you up as an orphan infant while you were laying on the ground in your placenta, and you had been abandoned. Your parents didn't want you." And he talks about the heritage that they had of two different people groups that brought forth this nation, and none of them liked each other, and none of them wanted this child. And he says, "I took you. I nurtured you. I developed you. I made you something you could never make yourself, because you would have perished there." And he's using all this imagery to refer to what he did to the Jews. He picked them out of nowhere to make them a nation that would shine before the world so that the world would want what the Jews had. Therefore, God's word would spread out. People would see this group of people that had wealth, that had sanitary practices, dietary practices, relational practices, and the God of the universe blessing them and being visible to them in a whole host of manners, which we call the Shekinah glory. God entering human space and time with some manifestation. Sometimes it's been as lightning, sometimes it's been as a burning bush. Other times it's been as a pillar of fire or a cloud that had a very specific audible manifestation. God made it real clear that this is how he's appearing. He came to the Jews. The Jews had everything. So this parable moves on, and it goes from this orphaned infant that's about to die that gets found, gets nourished, and she becomes a beautiful, beautiful queen to the king. He's the king. She becomes the queen. Then the parable moves in to a new segment. The queen, and that represents the time of Solomon. The nation Israel had progressed to the point when we get around 900 or so, actually it would be going the other way for B.C. There's probably going to be about 970 B.C. Solomon was the third king in the united monarchy of Israel. Solomon was the wisest and the most wealthy person that has ever lived. And he controlled the Middle East. God had developed the Jewish nation, the nation Israel, to the point where it was the splendor of the world. That's the queen, married to the king, God. Then it fell apart. Under Solomon, what the queen did, the nation Israel, was to start making alliances with foreign nations and marrying into them, exchanging sons and daughters in marriage to solidify political relationships. And when that happened, instead of the Jews spreading the good news of Jehovah God that had chosen them to bring his message to the world, they took the pagan gods, the pagan, sinful, sexual, drug-infested, and other ugly practices of these other nations into their bosom. So as we look at this section today, I've titled this, "The Queen Now Becomes a Harlot," because she acted as if she was an adulteress and a prostitute and did it for no gain. So the text, I'll read through the text. It's rather long, and then we'll break down the text. And it's got some cumbersome language because of the way this parable was written. But I'll go through each one of these verses. But I want you to get just the general gist of what God is saying here and how angry he is with them. "And it is come to pass after all thy wickedness," woe, woe unto thee, saith the Lord Jehovah, "that thou hast built unto thee a vaulted place and hast made thee a lofty place in every street. Thou hast built thy lofty place at the head of every way and has made thy beauty an abomination and has opened thy feet to everyone that passed by and multiplied thy whoredom. Thou hast also committed fornication with the Egyptians, thy neighbors, great of flesh, and hast multiplied thy whoredoms to provoke me to anger. Behold, therefore, I've stretched out my hand over thee and have diminished thine ordinary food and delivered thee unto the will of them that hate thee, the daughters of the Philistines that are ashamed of thy lewd way. Thou hast played the harlot also with the Assyrians because thou wast insatiable. Yea, thou hast played the harlot with them and yet thou wast not satisfied. Thou hast moreover multiplied thy whoredom to the land of traffic unto Chaldea, and yet thou wast not satisfied herewith. How weak is thy heart, saith the Lord Jehovah, seeing thou doest all these things, the work of an impudent harlot, in that thou buildest thy vaunted place at the head of every way, and makest thy lofty place in every street, and hast not been as a harlot, in that thou scornest Tyre, a wife that committeth adultery, that taketh strangers instead of her husband. They give gifts to all harlots, but thou givest thy gifts to all thy lovers, and bribest them that they may come unto thee on every side for thy whoredoms. And thou art different from other women in thy whoredoms, in that none followeth thee to play the harlot, and whereas thou givest hire, and no hire is given unto thee. Therefore, thou art different. Wherefore, O harlot, hear the word of Jehovah. Thus saith the Lord Jehovah, because thy filthiness was poured out, and thy nakedness uncovered through thy whoredoms with thy lovers, and because of all the idols of thy abomination, and for the blood of the children that thou didst give into them, therefore, behold, I will gather all thy lovers with whom thou hast taken pleasure, and all them that has loved, and all them that thou hast hated. I will even gather them against thee on every side, and will uncover thy nakedness unto them, that they may see all thy nakedness. And I will judge thee as women that break wedlock and shed blood are judged. And I will bring upon thee the blood of wrath and jealousy." So God is condemning Israel for merging into these pagan nations and taking their pagan practices in. So the text starts off with, and it has come to pass after all thy wickedness, woe, woe unto thee, saith Lord Jehovah, that thou hast built unto thee a vaulted place and hast made thee a lofty place in every street. You know, the woes that are given in the Bible always precede a very serious godly judgment. We see God in Jesus coming down on the Pharisees in the 23rd chapter of Matthew, which is just before he gives the Olivet Discourse, just before his crucifixion. He'd had enough. He had tried to teach them. He tried to let them know who he was, and they were stiff-hearted, and he starts, woe, woe, woe. And he lays out a bunch of woes in the 23rd chapter. During the Great Tribulation, the angels come with their deadly vials and trumpets and seals, pouring out vengeance on this earth and yelling, woe, woe, woe. That's a serious word in the Bible. It's just before some horror is going to happen. And we know what's going to happen to Israel because it's in the past now. The Babylonians came in 586 B.C. But he says that they wouldn't listen to their prophets, and because they were disloyal to him, that's the problem. He says, you're going to once again become naked and abandoned, just like you were when I found you. I'm going to take you right back to where you were. Because it's not that you just don't appreciate what I've done to develop you. You hate me. You turn against me and you say things against me. You ever hear the concept of they are biting the hand that feeds them? That's what's going on. They had too much. Too much. And God let them flourish and develop. And I'm serious. Solomon was the richest guy that's ever lived. Just even conservative estimates. If you tried to do an estimate based on inflation that we know about, I mean, he had more money and more wisdom than anybody. They had everything. And they got rid of God because he was just too irritating. Too irritating. So this harlotry that he's talking about here, the Bible used sexual immorality interchangeably with spiritual immorality. And he calls it spiritual fornication. And he's saying that your harlotry, the open harlotry that they had displayed out on these high places, these altars where sexual immorality was taking place and worshiping sexual objects and these weird Canaanite gods. You know, we think about this, and I know I've said this quite frequently, that it's hard for us to conceive of how can somebody worship some weird phallic symbol or a golden calf or something. You look at it, that's so crazy. Because it's drug infested, it's saturated with too much alcohol, and it's sexually charged, and people are having orgies around it. That's what draws people in. That's what drew Solomon away from God. He married these foreign women. He had a harem of 1,000 women. I mean, it's just incredible. 700 wives and 300 concubines. And they turned him away from God. It's the same thing that happens here. It's sex and drugs and excessive amounts of alcohol staying in that stupor. Where, yeah, anything goes, you know. And so they start worshiping these other gods. Exactly what God's enemy wants. Exactly how it works. Exactly what he does. So he's saying here that the worshiping of these pagan idols and these sexual practices that were taking place in these high places, he says, you've moved that down now, and you're doing it out in the open in the city. You're not even just keeping it there. You've just taken it out everywhere. And he says, your pagan idolatry has caused you to go seek out lovers other than yourself. He says, you've committed these whoredoms with Egypt, Assyria, Babylon. And we saw in previous sessions how the Bible teaches that the subsequent kings to Solomon made alliances with these other places that just polluted things. And the classic example is Jezebel. King Ahab, who is not a stellar guy to begin with, marries the daughter of the king up in what's today is Lebanon. And he marries this daughter. Her name is Jezebel. And she is a pagan devil worshiper. I mean, she's just sick. And that pollutes everything. That pollutes it. It just made everything worse. And that's what he's saying here. You had this desire for these foreign gods and these foreign intrigues. Solomon started it, but man, oh man, oh man, did it get worse, and you just loved it. You just piled it on more and more and more. Then he says, in verse 25, thou hast built thy lofty place at the head of every way, and made thy beauty an abomination, and has opened thy feet to everyone that passed by, and multiplied thy whoredoms. So he's saying, you desecrated your holiness. I gave you everything. I had given you the pattern, my law for righteous living, to have a righteous relationship with me, and you gave it up. You willingly gave it up so that you could follow after these pagan practices that are dragging you down. Now, it's interesting here, as I think we can look at this. You say, open their feet. Well, in Hebrew, regalim is either legs or feet. And it's just saying, you've opened yourself in a sexual manner to these people in all these other countries. And again, he's tying sexual relationships to spiritual relationships, because you've taken in a lewd manner, opened yourself up to these pagan gods that you wanted more than me. You're flaunting your lewdness. And it's spiritual fornication. You want it more than you want me, and you're doing it in such a flagrant manner. It's just incredible. It's hard to imagine that they had a shameless attraction and pursuit of these idols and open sexual behavior associated with it. Now, the multiplication of her whoredom, it just means that they yielded, the Jews yielded to these other nations and got nothing in return. Nothing. Solomon, who started this practice, was making alliances to strengthen his country. He didn't need to do that. He shouldn't have done it, but he started it. And in subsequent kings, they were just doing it to do it. And instead of these nations coming to the Jews and giving them, the Jews started giving to these other nations. The nations, after a while, didn't even want them. But the Jews kept giving them more money and bringing them in and take this and here's our women and all that. And it's interesting that she yielded nothing in return, but she became like a worn-out prostitute that the people that were coming to her didn't even want her. You know, you've been a prostitute now for 50 years. You're all worn out. You don't look so good anymore. We don't want you. So now she's now saying, here, I'll pay you to take me. What an imagery. What an imagery. And the text moves on and says, thou hast committed fornication with the Egyptians. Thy neighbor's great affliction has multiplied thy whoredom to provoke me to anger. Behold, therefore, I've stretched out my hand over thee and have diminished thine ordinary food and delivered thee unto the will of them that hate thee, the daughters of the Philistines, that are ashamed of thy lewd way. Thou hast played the harlot also with the Assyrians, because thou wast insatiable. Yea, thou hast played the harlot with them, and yet thou wast not satisfied. Thou hast moreover multiplied thy whoredom into the land of traffic, unto Chaldea, and yet thou wast not satisfied herewith. God, he's saying that their spiritual fornication with the Egyptians wasn't just for that reason. It was because you wanted to intentionally provoke me to anger. You know, it's biting the hand that feeds it. God blessed them, and they turned around and they said, yeah, well, we don't like you. We're going to go over here and we're going to do things you don't like just to make you mad. And they did. And they did. So he says, okay, I'm going to bring famine as a result of this attitude that you have, just like I did. And one example is in the days of the judges. We see that in Ruth chapter 1, verse 1, where the description of that famine in those times was brought into the world. And if you don't think God controls things, it's how he does it. He initiates wars, he brings famines, he brings massive amounts of weather, things that people can't control. He does things that are outside of time and space, here in time and space. Now, there was such a religious degradation in Jerusalem. They were just following such terrible practices because the Canaanites had them. The Canaanites did these things. They were disease-ridden, venereal disease-ridden, drug-infested, pagan idol worshippers. And that's what the Jews wanted instead of the God of this universe that brought them together and gave them his practices for the best possible life they could have on this earth. They practiced these shameless things. You know, Isaiah commented on this right in his first chapter. He said, how is the faithful city become a harlot? And our text says here they played the harlot with the Assyrians. They couldn't control themselves because of the degree of lust they had let come into their minds. Lust is an inordinate desire to have or do something that goes way beyond a normal desire. For example, lust, when it's applied to a business, goes way beyond a healthy profit motive, and it gets into greed where there's never enough. In sexual relations, it goes way beyond a satisfactory relationship with your spouse in a committed marriage to a lustful, never satisfied desire for ever increasing sexual experiences. That's lust. It's terrible what it is, and it's satanically driven. And what they're saying is there's no satisfaction. So once you got hooked into that, you kept going and going and going and going. And he says, and yet thou wast not satisfied. Because you can't be satisfied when you're lustful. It doesn't work. They were practicing the same idolatrous rites that the Canaanites were doing. And the name Canaan, it's implying here that they had made Judea as corrupt as the Canaanites were. And even when they got carried away to Babylon, which is what the reference here is of the Chaldeans, on the way there they were still doing the same things. And when they got there, they were still doing the same things. It was going to take a punishment of 70 years to cleanse that nation from their sins. 70 years. That's how long they were going to be in Babylon. Now the text moves on. Now he's going to talk about the magnitude of their wickedness. And again, it's in this big parable here. How weak is thy heart, saith the Lord Jehovah, seeing thou doest all these things, the work of an impudent harlot, in that thou buildest the vaulted places at the head of every way, and makest thy lofty place in every street, and hast not been a harlot, in that thou scornest hire a wife that committeth adultery, that taketh strangers instead of her husband. They give gifts to all the harlots, but thou givest thy gifts to all thy lovers, and bribest them that they may come unto thee on every side for thy whoredoms. Thou art different from the other women in thy whoredoms, in that none followeth thee to play the harlot. And whereas thou givest hire, and no hire is given unto thee, therefore thou art different. They could no longer discern good from evil. They'd lost the ability. They were lustful. They had fallen into the idolatrous practices of this sexual immorality and this spiritual fornication and these other gods with these strange, strange people. They were ruled by lust and deceit. Ruled by it. They just couldn't see through that. You know, the text here is describing in Old Testament terms there that normal harlots will play down the gifts that her paramours are giving them in trying to get more. That's not enough. That's not enough. I need more. I need more. And if the paramour is attracted to the harlot, he's going to give her more and more and more. But in this case, God says to the Jews, you'll do this for nothing. As a matter of fact, you're going to give them. What's wrong with you? Are you that depraved? And the answer is yes, you were. She was an adulterous wife as well as a prostitute. She was brazen. Brazen. The worst of the worst of the worst. She preferred strangers to her own husband. Jerusalem was a corrupt spiritual adulterer. She'd even resorted to paying bribes rather than receiving a fee. And this just showed how debased the country had gotten because they had a preference for foreign alliances and foreign people and foreign gods and their foreign practices. So he says, okay, I'm going to withhold my blessings that I had given you so freely. When you leave the truth of God's word, you lose his protection. When you leave the truth of God's word, you lose his protection. And it has happened in our time when the Bible has gotten dumbed down. It's gotten neglected. People will say, well, I'm just only going to read this part. I don't want to believe that part. I'm only going to trust this part. I don't believe that. I'll believe this. If you leave God's word, you lose his protection. There are so many doctrines in this Bible designed for protection that if we leave them, if we ignore them or deny them, God denies us. He won't give us that protection. And that's exactly what was happening here. You know, you would expect, according to the way this text is reading here, that one would be loyal, one nation would be loyal to their own gods. The pagans were. The pagans didn't give up on their gods. But the Jews gave up on Jehovah God. They chose to follow the gods around them instead of the genuine, true God. Jerusalem squandered her wealth, just squandered it, on things that couldn't even begin to bless her. They couldn't even begin to bless her. The true God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob had given them massive blessings, just incredible blessings. And they just said, I don't care. Well, that I don't care attitude led them into a destruction by the Babylonians, and being carted away in captivity for 70 years. Well, look what God says here. Wherefore, O harlot, hear the words of Jehovah. Thus saith the Lord Jehovah, because thy filthiness was poured out and thy nakedness uncovered through thy whoredoms with thy lovers, and because all the idols of thy abomination for the blood of thy children that thou didst give unto them. So the queen had completely transformed into this brazen prostitute who didn't take any payment for her services. Matter of fact, gave them money because as the imagery in the previous verses showed, she had become an aged out prostitute that no one wanted. So she had to pay people to take her. And that means people would come in and they would take the riches of the nation. Which is really crazy. That's how depraved they'd gotten. You know, the first chapter of Romans says that people sin and sin and sin. Finally, God withdraws and he lets them have that as the basis for their thought patterns. the depraved mind. If that's what people want, and they do it for such a long period of time that their consciences don't work, they won't listen to anybody, and they end up suffering because they made decisions that were harmful to them. And here he's saying she was an adulterous wife as well as a prostitute, and she just preferred other men instead of her own husband. God, in this imagery, in this parable, was the husband. The queen is Israel. The queen became a brazen prostitute, a harlot, if you will, and would not acknowledge her husband. And was doing things to spite her husband, to make her husband mad. So she gave bribes to the other people, and she would not listen to God's warnings, who made them through the prophets, the righteous prophets like Jeremiah and Ezekiel. God says, okay, I've had enough. He said, your filthiness was poured out. And it's interesting is the way that this Hebrew language works. Hebrew is built on a system of three root letters. And those three root letters of words will morph from one thing to another. They'll add a prefix, a suffix, an infix. And this pouring out that is used in this thing here is nekoshet. It's used in two ways. It's used to describe the lower part of a female's body. And it's got the same root as the word for the serpent, nachash. The same root letters. It's a Hebrew play on words. The Hebrew Bible's filled with these play on words. Use these three root letters and it'll morph into something that's similar, and they tie the two together. We would call it a pun today. You know, a play on words. And this one here is showing that the source of her wickedness is Satan. The enemy of God comes in to these environments where you're leaving the will of God, you're following after lustful pursuits of ideologies that are outside of God's will, and Satan draws you away, just like he did in the Garden of Eden to Eve. He never went to Eve and said, oh, God's not real, he's not there, don't pay attention to him. He just instituted doubt. Did God really say that? And that's all it took. Just a little bit of doubt dropped into her mind. And it worked. She started thinking, I don't know, you know. And didn't take long before he tempted her. And that's what he does. That's what he does. Satan is wicked. But we have the means to fight him. We resist him and he flees from us. We don't fight him. We just resist him. Follow God. Don't do these things. You don't have to follow after the world. Now, what was the summary form, if you will, the depth of the wickedness of this harlot or Israel? She exposed herself to many lovers, many countries surrounding them. She exposed herself, said, I want what you have. Come into me. She worshipped idols instead of her genuine husband. Left God, went after these weird idols. And as we've seen in previous lessons, she sacrificed her children in a number of different ways, according to what these pagan gods did. It's just disgusting. Now, God, who is the faithful husband in this parable, says, I'm going to curse you. And he has promised this. They had this in the Mosaic Law that was given 1440 B.C. Let's go fast forward. This is 900 years later. They had this. They knew it. Leviticus 26 is just loaded with condemnations that God is going to bring if they don't follow what he said. And I've recreated another one here in Deuteronomy 28. Look what it says here. But it shall come to pass, if thou wilt not hearken unto the voice of Jehovah thy God, to observe to do all his commands and his statutes, which I command thee this day, that all these curses shall come upon thee and overtake thee. Curses shall thou be in the city, and curses shall thou be in the field. Cursed shall be thy basket and thy kneading trough. Cursed shall be the fruit of thy body and the fruit of the ground, the increase of thy cattle and the young of the flock. Cursed shall be thou when thou comest in, and cursed shall be thou when thou goest out. Jehovah will send upon thee cursing, discomfiture, and rebuke, and all that thou puttest thy hand unto to do, until thou be destroyed, and until thou perish quickly, because of the evil of thy doings, whereby thou hast forsaken me. Jehovah will make the pestilence cleave unto thee, until he have consumed thee from off the land whither thou goest to possess it. Jehovah will smite thee with consumption, and with fever, and with inflammation, fiery heat, and with the sword, and with blasting, and with mildew, and shall pursue thee until thou perish. And thy heaven that is over thy head shall be as brass, and the earth that is underneath shall be as iron. In other words, there's no rain coming down, and the land is going to be just as dry and hard. You're not going to be able to grow anything. This is the way God controls things. He does things that are way outside. We call them natural phenomena. God brings judgments for reasons. I'm going to close here with this last verse, Ezekiel 37. And he's going to do a reverse here. He's even going to bring these lovers, these other countries, against her, which is really bad. Therefore, behold, I will gather all thy lovers with whom thou hast taken pleasure, and all them that hast loved, with all them that thou hast hated, and I will gather them against thee on every side, and will uncover thy nakedness unto them, that they may see all thy nakedness. So all these countries are going to come, and they're going to plunder Jerusalem together. Even the perpetual enemies, the Philistines and the Jews, bonded together earlier, but they then assimilated into these despised nations. Now, a harlot is punished as prescribed in the Mosaic law, which is tearing off of the clothes, public humiliation and nakedness, public trial, public stoning till death, dismembering of the body, and the burning of the house. Israel is likewise going to be exposed because she's guilty. And the last verse here says, and I will judge thee as women that break wedlock and shed blood are judged, and I will bring upon thee the blood of wrath and jealousy. So he just sums it up. I'm going to do exactly to you, the country, the nation Israel, as I said in the Mosaic law, I would do to a harlot. It turns away from her family, turns away from her husband, turns away from me. You're going to be punished as an adulteress. Public shame is what it turns out to be. She'd openly carried out her sins, and now she's going to be openly exposed and made a spectacle to the world. God is going to make the person who exchanges an offer of a relationship with him for the world, the person that wants the world, is going to be disgraced in the eyes of the world. That's what he's saying here. The Babylonians hurled stones at Jerusalem during the siege. They came in with the sword, just like the Mosaic law said was going to happen to the harlot. So it's interesting imagery that God uses here in this long parable. He is going to pour out his jealousy on Jerusalem, and he's going to have what the Bible speaks of as the wrath of a jealous husband on an adulterous wife. By shedding her blood, such as Israel had been towards God, her faithful husband. Let's pray.